I realized that guy's nerves made me nervous, and it was making other people in the plane nervous. And I felt like the Lord say, when you exhibit fear in your home, you pass that fear along to your family.
Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss. Jeff, hello. How are you doing today?
I'll be honest, Stephen. I am so nervous to be on the show today.
Is that why you're high as a kite? What have you been taking before we started the cameras?
That's my irony.
Oh, I see. You're fine.
I'm fine. I'm doing great.
Oh, okay. Have you been admitted to a woman's prison, or what's with what your background? What's happening?
Someone told me that the podcast has pivoted to where now it's film depositions.
And did you also think that if you wore a shirt that matched the background, that it would be kind of like we wouldn't need a green screen?
Yeah, I wanted to look as much like a floating head as possible.
Okay, well, it's working great. Is there something fun that happened during your day you could report to us?
Well, right now there's demo day up in our master bathroom.
Oh,
we've had a terrible master bathroom since we moved in here. We're not doing it because of aesthetics, although that's part of it. That is nice. That is a nice to have. But this thing, just a side note for you DIYers. If you're gonna DIY it well. Don't DIY it poorly and then sell your house to someone else.
Oh.
Because that means there's going to be cracks in the tile and water's going to get in there. And you're going to realize we have a lot of problems that if they're not dealt with soon, we're going to have maybe structural issues.
Okay.
So we've got a guy tearing out the master bath and going to replace tile and even some framing in there, because I just went up there and saw it. And what I saw under the hood was a little like, ooh, okay, I'm all right.
Well, I'm glad you're getting that fixed. And I cheerlead with you the fact that you're going to have a finished product that you like more, like new tile and stuff like that.
Yes, new tile. The people who owned this before, they had a real affinity for browns and yellows.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And so since we've moved in, we've lived here for almost 10 years now, bit by bit, we're trying to replace the browns and yellows with maybe some gray. I don't know if you've seen this gray back here, but... you know, some neutral tones.
Like your shirt.
Kind of thing. Yeah, like
so
my
you just
shirt.
Kind of, you just kind of walk around and go, does it match my shirt? And if it doesn't, let's get rid of it. But really, you're here for a completely different reason. And that's because in my world, you're somewhat of an expert on this topic. And you and I were having a conversation recently about how you were seeing anxiety or worry in your family in different ways. And you threw out a couple of nuggets and I thought, not only do I think those are true nuggets, but I think our people could benefit from them for the following reason. If you'll indulge me, I'm going to throw some stats at you. People reporting anxiety is up 30% in the last decade. 3 in 10 teens report. So report means they're talking to a professional of some kind, somebody that's taken it down. Report dealing with anxiety. I don't know that I knew one person in high school that would say, I have spoken to a professional because I feel that I deal with anxiety. Hospital admissions for teens dealing with anxiety have doubled in the last decade. That's 200%. That's 100% increase. Anxiety's list of health consequences, that is, if you know somebody that's perpetually nervous, on edge, keyed up, as we like to say, keyed up, health consequences include increased risk of cardiovascular disease, increased risk of substance abuse, increased risk of mental health problems, hyperactivity, fatigue, and immune dysregulation. So any of the thing that's downline of your immune system being compromised due to increased cortisol levels and inflammation, that would include allergies and tumors and asthma. Those all can result from this. I mean, they're going to result from this ballooning anxiety culture that's happening right now. And those stats are from the American Heart Association and National Institutes of Health. What do you think hearing those stats?
That's why small dogs don't live long. They're just nervous little wrecks. Thunder hits and they're gone. Yeah, that all makes sense. All of the cortisol stuff, especially. You get cortisol coursing through your veins, and it's a destructor. It's like blood cancer. It's bad. I think what's also interesting. So a lot of that stuff you're citing, comes from Jonathan Haidt, probably Abigail Schreier as well. They ring this bell quite often.
Uh-huh.
I know y'all have talked about both of them on the pod before.
Yep.
I think what's also interesting in there is that it has become, so I don't know, I'm not saying those numbers are inflated, but I will say it's become fashionable to recognize yourself as an anxious person. People want to self-select into this, which is a bananas thing. Again, it's not saying that it's not real, but this stigma that people want to, I think Amelia Perry might have talked about something like this on an episode. People want to identify themselves with a disease. That's weird.
It's true. I don't know if you ever heard this message translation of the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus says something like, I want you people to live free and easy. Hmm. And just the calm, open, not worried about tomorrow. The Proverbs 31 woman, she's laughing at the future. And she's just thinking, I don't know what the future holds. It might hold world war and all of the scary things that are in Revelation. But you know what? God will be there for us. It'll be good. I don't know how it'll be good, but he's good in the middle of troubled times, et cetera, et cetera. And that seems so absent from the culture these days anyways.
Well, just to double down on this for a second, I think with particularly men, I think, who are in the workforce, there is that you're proud of the anxiety that you experience. I am so busy. It is crazy. We want that because how weird would it sound if you said, I'm handling things pretty well. Yeah, I've got a lot on my plate, but boy, I'm just kind of taking it one piece at a time. People who hear that interpret that as, oh, you're taking it easy right now. I see. So we like the stigma of busyness and that and the anxiety, the concomitant anxiety there.
I consider you to be an insider with insights on this topic. I know you're going to make 3 points and a conclusion. What do you want to tell the people about anxiety?
Well, anxiety is a learned behavior. You get it honest. Nobody grows up in a super stable family and the kid turn out like an anxious, worrisome kid. It just can't happen, right?
Right. So when you see Woody Allen or Larry David, you think, oh, mommy did a number on him.
Yes. So, and I appreciate you saying that I'm an insider. I think what you mean is that I've had a long history of I will say dealing with this, and dealing with it sounds like I'm nailing it. I got it, but I would say that in fact it's a lot of struggle. I've had a lot of struggle in this, and I'm still obviously a work in progress, trying to figure out how to act on this for myself and for my family. I was thinking about it today, and I don't know that I necessarily grew up as an anxious kid. I wasn't this freaked out little kid for the most part. It happened over a long period of time. I think the one exception there was we lived in Kansas when I was a kid, and anytime there was any sort of tornado warning, which was pretty darn often in the summer, I just remember melting down with fear. Like I remember one night being in the basement with my family and my sister, she's laying on the floor dead asleep and I'm throwing up because I'm so nervous. I'm the little dog. I'm the Yorkie. Who's just get and freaking out.
You said it's a learned behavior. Was somebody else around you freaking out at the weather?
No, that's what's interesting is I know that my dad was very, very calm. But I do believe that my mom, who also got it honest, she has a lot of fear. She has had a lot of fear. I'll tell you a quick story about her. My mom grew up in a large, poor family in Nashville, and her father was a World War II veteran, a great guy. It was a really great guy. But while he was in World War II, I mean, he saw the worst of humanity. His job as a bulldozer driver in the Philippines was to dig trenches where they would bury dead bodies. And he said they weren't all dead. So he saw just the awfulness of war and came back to America. I think we would say there was a certain amount of PTSD for this guy. He had so much fear. Boy, this is a hard mix right here. Fear plus love. He loved his family so much. This was such a devoted family man, but he was so afraid of what the world could toss at them. Mm-hmm. And so he ruled with fear. And my mom tells these stories often. My grandfather would get a call from the local cop and go, "Jimmy, well, some kid got high on drugs, blew his brains out in a car on the field." My grandfather would get the kids in the car, take them to that car, make them stand right up at the window to see what happened, and go, "Kids, that's what happens when you do drugs." And my mom says, I remember with my face against the window, just my eyes closed. I wasn't going to look.
Oh, my stars.
So you can imagine how my mom might possibly grow up with a bit of fear herself.
One of your tips to us not to introduce trauma purposefully to our children?
Look, I'm not gonna judge.
You raise
your kids.
There's many different ways to lead a family. Observation of corpses is one of the options. Okay.
And I hate to say it, but ironically, one of his children did end up addicted to drugs. I mean, all that to say, it doesn't work also. So my mom,
right.
My mom grew up in a tough house that way. And I know that as we grew up, she got really like, okay, when we started driving, okay, be careful of this. And I want you know, the last thing out of her mouth as we left the house was always be careful. And I, you know, it's white noise as a kid, or you don't know the fish doesn't know it's wet. We just kind of assume, well, that's just how you parent.
That's how parents do.
And I would feed a lot of fears when I was younger. I had a really terrible habit of, I'd check out these little ghost books from the library. Mm. And there was, I mean, I would go so far as say it was definitely something spiritual going on, but I was just trying to feed fear. I don't know why. It was very strange. And then when I got to high school, I had some physical fears. I wasn't like a debilitated kid. I wasn't like, agoraphobic, I can't leave the house. But I definitely had turned into more social fears as a high school kid. Scared to death of talking to other people, scared to death of social interactions. Wanted to pull back, was very nervous about any sort of social interactions. And that continued on until into college, and through relationships, through different things, God started to correct a lot of that stuff in me. But it's taken a long time to get there.
Okay, so I'm just going to assume, paint with a very broad brush, as you grow in Christ through your 20s, some of this stuff gets uncovered to you. You try to combat it and repent best you can and, you know, turn away from the things that are sinful but came from your family of origin. Now what in family life? It's all gone?
No, you said something interesting that I think we have to sit on for a second. Fear is sin. It's not just an emotion. It's not some neutral emotion. Giving into fear is sin. If sin is disagreeing with God and acting on that, then that's what fear is. And when I started to realize that, I realized I've got to start cutting that out more and more of my life. When I got married, though, as with anyone, marriage just takes whatever those hidden things are, those things that you thought you've dealt with, and makes them come out worse. And so we've run into some situations. Probably the worst of them was a health issue in our family that scared the boo out of me. And when it started to, you know, when it started to come through, I mean, it was like 1,000 tornadoes, to be honest, 1,000 tornadoes in one night. And it scared me to no end. And because of that, all of the old fear stuff started coming back. And I realized just how it wasn't dead. It was the dead man was still knocking around, and having to over time deal with that. And, you know, I can talk about a number of ways that fear keeps knocking on my door. Me personally, when it came to starting my own business and leaving a stable paycheck to go out and start a business.
Yeah, I've got to throw this in. I got to throw in the fact that you continue to do a number of things that what we would think of as people paralyzed with fear do not do. You've had a creative career. You've been a screenwriter. Well, that's not easy. There's no guaranteed paychecks there. You kind of did Hollywood thing for a while. Then you've started your own business. Those things all seem like this guy's doing great. And you're saying, I don't know, what are you saying? How does those things mix with fear?
There's a deeper psychological thing here, but I still identify myself as a very play it safe guy. And if you or anyone else were to walk through my life and go, yeah, but what about this? What about this? What about this? I would look at those and go, yeah, but really, this is who I am. And so it's interesting for you to parrot those things back. You've walked with me through all of those things.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for you on the outside to go, looks like you've done some things that aren't fearful. It's good medicine for me to go, yeah, I might have a default way of thinking of myself that I'm a fearful, but there's proof points to the contrary. And it wasn't because I, you know, screwed my courage up somehow and made something happen. I would just say it's the faithfulness of God to not let up on me.
Yeah, I've got to insert here this fact that I deeply believe in, which is you're living out this story of it happens. The easiest way to tell this story is with money. You're from a poor, this isn't you, but this could be somebody. You're from a poor family. You have nothing. You start to learn God's ways. You start to save. You live below your means. You have an ambition to provide for your family. And one can get down on oneself if by the time they're 65, they're not rich. But the fact is that they've actually pushed the ball way down the field for the family, and the children are not going to be exposed to the same dangers and belief systems that you were, because you've walked with God in fighting those things. You know, you might not feel like you're the king of the world on those topics, but you have fought and you've gained ground, and you're not passing on to the next generation what you received from the previous generation. That is a common story in the kingdom of God, and it happens in all sorts of ways. So in your way, let's just rewind a couple of generations. And let's go for your mom. There's this full on, like nothing holding back the, as you say, the tornado of anxiety that is assaulting her. Now let's deal with you in the middle. And I'm not saying your mom hasn't done any of this work, but you have for yourself, which is whatever I picked up that came in the bloodline, I'm opposing that in the name of God. Now my children, they're going to deal with the thing. If you've been walking with God, they're going to deal with that thing. I know we're talking about anxiety right now, less than you did growing up. They might have to deal with it to some degree, but they're going to deal with it less. And so I want to just call out to everybody, whatever the thing is that you're fighting, if you don't feel like I've nailed this thing, I should be interviewed as the king of this thing. You might be feeling like, I come from this super unhealthy family, and I'm still middling healthy, but I've been fighting it hard. Well, guess what? Your kids come from a middling healthy family. They don't come from a super unhealthy family like you. Does that make sense?
Yes, that's great.
You're gaining ground generationally. I don't think we're graded it's your 80 years on earth. I think that the Lord sees us as part of this large multi-generational story. And the question is, did you move the ball down the field in the years that you were the driver for your family? That's why we're talking to dads about this subject right now, because we all have to be handling what's happening in the culture and with our kids right now. So I guess my next question for you, you can comment on that.
Can I stack on that real quick?
Sure.
Let me stack on that.
As long as you don't say that you're going to double click on what I just said.
I would never say that.
Okay, thank you.
You know, we talk in culture, it's not uncommon to say, well, I want my kids to have a better life than I had. And so you're moving the ball forward financially or maybe even educationally. But I think what you're saying is that also happens spiritually. They're sort of standing on your shoulders and dealing with that. I also want to say, as you were listing out those kind of achievements or milestones in my life of doing something that would have proven itself to be the opposite of fear to some degree, I can only say I had a great cloud of witnesses around me at every one of those things. People like yourself, honestly, people like Mark, people like my wife, people who would come alongside me and look at me and go, no. That's good for you to try that. That's good for you to go there. If I didn't have anybody, you know, so I guess I'm talking to the guy out there, and we'll talk about how this works downward here in a second, but I'm talking to the guy out there who identifies with me. By the way, I've known old Steve and Manuel for 35 years now, and he's not a guy who necessarily is prone to fear. As a matter of fact, it's the opposite. So if you hear him and you're like, well, I don't really relate there, that's okay. You can relate to me. And I can tell you, don't surround yourself with fearful people. Because if you do, every bad inclination you have will be affirmed. But if you surround yourself with, I'm not talking about reckless people, I'm talking about faith-filled people who aren't afraid to go towards something. You have to have those people because you don't, I'm talking to myself, you don't have your bearings. Your bearings are off. Your compass is not set correctly. And what you think is safe is actually fear sometimes. When I left to start my own business, I'm not the kind of guy who would go, all right, everybody, shut up, watch this. I needed Stephen, I needed Mark, I needed my wife, I needed other people to come alongside me and go, this is really something that you should be doing, and this will be good for you. But I'm the sole breadwinner, and everybody just kind of went, uh-uh. Even your wife, I remember, she was over and she was encouraging me as well. You just need people like that. So please, if fear is got your number, there's a number of things you can do. One thing though is to surround yourself with brave people.
That's great. I can't help it, Jeff. I have to talk about money for a second. We know that if somebody comes from a poverty background and is bad with money, there are research papers written on the fact that if you will surround yourself with people who are good with money, are successful, and as you just said, if you'll just talk about your stuff, you might have really dumb ideas about money, but if you'll just find a couple of people, a couple of successful guys at the church house or whatever who are doing it right, and then just talk to them about, I'm thinking of buying this car. You think that's a good move for me in my life? Just get around those people. And what happens is they start to coach you out of the thing that you wanted to be out of anyways, but you didn't know how to get out of it. And they'll correct your thinking, et cetera. So it happens with money. It happens with what the charismatic types call a stronghold, like fear, et cetera. So I really liked your point before that fear is, I'm gonna inflate the words that you used. You said it's sin. Fear is a version of idolatry. It is a gross sin to God. It is a big sin because fear, engaging in fear is to entertain the idea that God is not going to get me out of whatever is coming. He's not going to be my protection. He's not going to be my provision. And so if I can fixate on that thing, that's my best shot at the future, is for me to fixate, to get anxiety, worry, et cetera. And that might be a little simplistic for describing anxiety, which I know has 1,000 faces. But you sent me a list of verses. Would you read a couple of those verses where the Bible says that fear is completely unacceptable?
Yeah, and as I do that, I think it was Michael O'Shields. I don't know who, but boy, this is
Michael
stuff.
O'Shields.
He's a little leprechaun talking about fear. He said, I think it's him, fear is a demonic prophecy that God will not be with you in the future.
Mm.
And I think Mark Douglas shared that with me, and boy, that has just stuck with me. Fear is a demonic prophecy that God will not be with you in the future.
So there's a nugget.
Golly. So a few verses of Isaiah 41:10, fear not, or we would say, don't fear. I am with you. Don't be dismayed because I'm your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Joshua 1:9, haven't I commanded you? And this is such a refrain through the scriptures. Be strong and courageous. Don't be frightened. Don't be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Obviously, Psalm 23, I might walk through the valley of the shadow of death, but I'm not going to fear any evil. Why? Boy, I've ruminated on this lately. Why? Because you're with me. Your rod and your staff, the thing that keeps me from accidentally walking off a cliff, and the thing that's going to protect me from lions, those things comfort me. Boy, I love this in the story of Gideon and Judges. The angel shows up and calls Gideon a mighty man of valor. And he's going, I don't know who you're talking about. That can't be me. But he goes, the angel blows off all of his, but I'm a, and just goes, you're a mighty man of valor. We're about to prove it. And so if you're a guy out there and you're like, man, I don't know about me, and would you just read the Gideon story and get all geeked up? And then, there's a number of others, but the one I've been really sitting on is Hebrews 12:13. It says, strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees. I like that one for me because it's a command. He's not going, if you'd like a better life, maybe think about strengthening your feeble arms and weak knees. He goes, do this. This is a command. And it's like a delightful command, because I know nobody's sitting around going, I really want weak arms and just shaky knees. Everyone deep down wants this.
Of course.
And so he says, do it. Grow in it.
As I'm hearing these verses, I'm hearing him, have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous? Him telling Gideon, you're a mighty man of valor. Strengthen your weak knees. I just think of your personal trainer and you're on the bench straining at 185, trying to push that weight up, and he's screaming at you, do it, let's go, come on. And it seems, it seems interesting to me, God is not represented to us in the church house as being like that.
Hmm.
He's the sweet comforter who is, I just hate these songs that we sing about, I'm so broken. If I hear the word broken in another church song, I'm going to break somebody. Because there's Isaiah passages. He will not put out a bruised reed or a smoldering wick. Yes, he's kind. But the kind of stuff that I want dads to get in the church house is I want them to hear God screaming at them while they're straining at the weight underneath them and going, you can do it. Strengthen your weak knees. Let's go. Why does that, I'm trying to set you up. Why does that matter for you specifically as the father of your home, that God would be telling you, get it together and be strong? And specifically, to be strong against all fear and anxiety.
Well, I'll tell y'all a story that I told Stephen recently. So I was on a flight, and I fly a lot for work, and I was sitting somewhat near the front of the plane. And as to go west out of Denver, you always go over the Rocky Mountains. It's always bumpy. I'm not the best flyer. I've gotten a little better, but you know, it makes everybody a little bit nervous. You get in some turbulence, but the pilot's always like, well, folks, we're going to be just fine. Everything, you know, he's always, everything's all right. And so as we're going along, it's a little bumpy. I'm sitting there reading a book or whatever, and I hear, oh. I'm like, oh, what's going on? we hit another bump. And I'm like, what? And then another bump. And then this loud curse. And I look up, and two rows in front of me, across the aisle, on the aisle, is a pretty nice looking, normal looking business guy. He's got like a smart shirt on, a sport coat, taller than me, big guy, just looks like a normal guy. This guy is holding onto the armrest like this with his right hand. And I'm not making this up. He's very tall. His left hand is above him, planted against the overhead compartment. And with every bump, I mean, audible, loud, and I'm just watching it. Another one. And I'm just like, I feel terrible for this guy because I've been nervous before, maybe not to that degree, but I'm just like, oh, this poor guy, what is going on? So I'm watching, and the flight attendant who's not and supposed
did you,
to.
Did you ask him if the plane goes down, are you in, is that stable position that you've created? Do you think that will probably keep you going when we all hit nose first? Into the Rockies.
I picture the NTSB going around investigating the fiery crash site. And there's a guy who's held on, and they're like, well, he knew what to do. And the guy gets up and goes, thank goodness I stabilized. I wedged myself in. So the flight attendant kind of gingerly, they're not allowed to get up, but they get up and he leans over to the guy very kindly and goes, oh, sir, are you nauseous? And the guy goes, no, I'm anxious. And then this is the kicker. The flight attendant goes, oh, do you not fly very often? And the guy goes, oh, I fly all the time.
It's like a skit.
I'm just marveling at this. And I sat there and I just thought, I don't know if you've experienced this, something so peculiar that you just have to go, God, is there something here for me? This is weird.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just felt like the Lord, he is kind. And I think he very kindly to me put his arm around me and said, see that guy up there? Yeah, I'm watching the whole thing. And the Lord go, that's you sometimes, buddy. That's you. And I thought, that's me. And I realized that guy's nerves made me nervous, and it was making other people in the plane nervous. And I felt like the Lord say, when you exhibit fear in your home, you pass that fear along to your family. And boy, was that a good judgment. You know, that was a good judgment for me, because my family and I were trying to do a big, we're running on faith on something. It's a big thing. And I just get nervous about it. And I don't know if we're going to. And I let that, it's on me like a stink. And it would be really, I guess, foolish and arrogant for me to marvel if my wife or kids were getting nervous about that too. It would be stupid. Of course, if I'm exhibiting that, why wouldn't they pick up on that? And so I felt like the Lord telling me, you need to deal with this, buddy, because this isn't just having to do with you. It has to do with your downline.
Okay. So that's great. The principle is that dad is God's culture leader. You are his representative in the home, and the buck stops with you when it comes to culture. So there's verses like the sins of the fathers will be visited on the children, meaning that your weaknesses are going to come out in them. And there's also in the positive, dads are commanded to teach children the ways of God, to teach them the Torah of God. So you're saying that anxiety specific is highly contagious when it comes from dads to children, because you're seen and you're mimicked and you're internalized by your children. So can you, I don't know, do you have any easy examples of seeing that in your kids, or you feel correct, you know, pulled up by God? Hey, watch it. Don't do that with them.
Yeah, I think anything that, you know, our kids are younger, they're 10 and 12. And so a lot of their fears are around physical things. You know, they're not worried about money for the most part. And they're not Although it's funny, just the other day, our oldest said something about she wasted some eggs on something. And she looked at my wife and said, I'll buy those eggs. I'll pay you back for those. And it was one of those like, okay, all right. Do we talk about how much eggs cost too much? Is that getting passed down to her? Our youngest, I was interviewing her before this, like, hey, tell me about when you feel like you have fears. Oh, it's, you know, I get scared about somebody breaking in or, you know, so it was all physical things. And I said, well, you know, what helps you the most from me? And she goes, when you pray for me, when you come in and pray for me, and like when you sing for me, sing over me, like there's certain songs that we'll sing. And there was something, I was trying to come up with what it was, and I can't remember exactly, but she was very afraid about something.
Mm.
And I went and sat with her and had a real dad talk with her and just said, hey, baby, I need you to know a few things. Like, we are going to take care of this. This is nothing you need to worry about. Nothing. We're not going to have fear about this. And I gave her some sort of handle on that, and just I kind of laid down the law in a very loving way.
Yeah.
Okay. And I went on a business trip right after that, and I opened my backpack, and there was a note from her in there, and it just said, Daddy, that talk helped me so much. Thank you. I am not going to believe. Oh, this, she goes, I am not going to believe those lies anymore. Any of those lies I tell, go away.
Wow. That's amazing. That Canadian Baptist writer, Henry Blackaby, who used to write devotionals, Henry Blackaby always said this phrase, and I remember puzzling over it in my 20s, not knowing the first thing about leading a family. And he said, I take all of my fears to God, and I take my faith to my family.
Hey.
And that makes more sense to me as the years pass, that when I get concerned about what the market's doing, for instance, I say to the Lord, I just want to remind myself before you, Lord, that you're my provision for the future. That if there's any security in my family line, it's that you've always been good to us, you know. Or that kind of weird, you and I both have widowed mothers, and when you can't get a hold of her for a day and a half, and you're like, did mother fall in the shower, you know? And you kind of have these moments of, well, I guess I could lash around some anxiety if I would like to right now. Or you think, wait a second. The reason that my mother has life and health and her mind right now is because of the goodness of God. And it's my job to not touch that thing, you know, with worry. And then when we come to the family, we're going to represent for them the faith and truth of God. That doesn't mean that we never tell on ourselves with them. It's that when I think of how I want my kids to think of me in the middle of troubled times, like when there's a problem, boy, I feel so much. I feel like the recorder just turns on. I just feel like immediately everybody's video screen is on and there's a spotlight over me. And how am I going to react in trouble? And I feel it so sharply in those moments that, okay, how I respond to this bad news or something as simple as a broken dish in the kitchen, how I respond to that. I am setting precedence everywhere, and I am coaching everybody. This is how we respond to trouble. And I want the first words out of my mouth to be, well, we trust in the Lord for starters. And sometimes if I don't know how to feel, I just start talking out loud, and I just start based on truth and work my way around to it. So anyways, those are some of my thoughts on that. Do you have thoughts?
Yeah. My mom always says, don't borrow trouble. You know, that's Jesus. Like, today's got enough trouble for its own. Don't give into that temptation to look out into the future and catastrophize alone. And especially in front of your family. That's just not good. That whole bring your faith to your family, that has stuck with me. And I'm not great at it. I'm trying hard at it. Uh, I also have a unique situation. I'm going to paint in broad strokes here, but I would imagine that for a lot of guys, the guy is more of the faith, you know, hey, we're going to be fine. And their wife might be the anxious basket case. Well, that's not
She usually is. She's the one that imports worry into the family usually.
And I say this embarrassingly and with abashedly. That's not the case in my house. My wife is much more like, hey, we're going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. She's a faith. She's such a loud faith voice in our house. When we run into problems, she always says, I'd rather God teach me this lesson through money than through health. Like, she just sees things from a very faith standpoint. It doesn't mean she doesn't have her fears. If she was sitting here, there's a certain avenue around physical health that's where her worry spot is. And so I'm able to go, we're not going to give in to that, and try to help her with that. But I'm trying, you know, to be it's hard to be the faith leader when you look at your wife and go, okay, she doesn't seem to ever be scared. I don't know. maybe that's an odd thing, but I don't imagine it's completely unusual.
No, it's not unheard of.
It's nothing I want. I don't want that. I repent of being the one who's like that. It's like anything, you kind of settle into it and go, I guess these are our roles. And no one's role is sin. And yeah. My role needs to be, even though she's the faith monster, I'm going to be faith monster too. Like, I am leading the way in that kind of faith.
If anxiety is a learned and addictive behavior, and dad is the culture leader, and you see people in the family bringing these things in to the home. For a lot of guys, it's in their wives. If you see these things in your children, et cetera, what are our moves? What do we do?
Well, let's start with the kids. Just be that stable force that speaks the faith. First off, anytime there's any sort of, well, I'm kind of afraid that, well, okay, you said afraid. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, just building faith on faith on faith. Our daughter has food allergies that can cause her to be a little nervous as she's taking these doses that are supposed to help. Anytime there's fear around that, I'm stepping in big and going, we're going to be fine. You'll be fine, sweetie. You just take this thing.
Man,
kind
that's
of blowing
a big,
past it.
That's a big deal. I have to say, it is not a foregone conclusion, great band, that when trouble comes or when there's illness or a prolonged sickness, it is not a foregone conclusion that there must also be anxiety and worry around it. So you can deal with the stuff, you can take the meds, you can go to the clinic and not give any room for fear. There are so many things that our culture would tell you, you get a free pass, and it's in the church a lot as well. You get a free pass to be totally worried about your situation. Oh, you're 40 and you're still single? Well, then you can be worried about marriage. There's no limit to how you can be worried about this. What are you talking about? Our King says it's completely off limits. So I appreciate you calling that out with your daughter's dietary restrictions. That's good.
Well, I'll throw back something you said years ago. I remember, if I get this wrong, forgive me, but I think it was when you first got married, and I think probably before you had kids. I remember, I think you said something like your wife said something to you just in a moment of vulnerability. Like, what's going to happen if, like, I'm just afraid that you might die? What's going to happen? And instead of you going, honey, I'm not going to die.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I remember
right.
You said something like, yeah, I could. And you just I remember you teaching me this lesson, like, what's the worst case scenario? Let's play that out. Does that ring a bell at all?
Oh, yeah. I like worst case scenarios.
Talk more about that. Like,
yeah.
Teach us how that plays out.
Well, what's the worst case scenario? And this is like my dad's life is what's the worst case scenario? So, like, I remember telling her, yeah, this is early on in marriage, and that, you know, when the new wife wakes up with a bad dream that the husband's been killed, you know, I'm like, well, we're not going to worry about that. allow me to make a comment on it, on that moment alone, because as you're saying, Jeff, one of our jobs is that we are on the lookout for where the buds of anxiety are under our roof. We don't have to overreact at every single thing. I'm worried that I've lost my pencil. In the name of Jesus, there will be no anxiety. You know, we don't have to do that. But we're on the watch out all the time for what are the things that are concerning my precious little flower wife that I'm to be caretaking? What are the things that are on her heart? Well, if I see something over time, I need to address it. That's the job as the priest in your home. That's the job. So this comes out of my wife, and I say something like, I could die. You know, like, that's totally possible. It's happened in my generations. I don't want heart disease. I don't want to die young. It could happen. If it does happen, my dear, Jesus will still be the king of the universe. He'll still be the leader of this family. He'll watch over you as a widow. There's promises about that. I might have gone over. We've done insurance stuff, that we have a huge community of friends around us that would come near. And the Lord will have a plan for your life that includes the years after my passing. So whatever the thing is, we're simply not going to worry about, oh, that could never happen. One of the things that you do when you do that is you give the enemy a little bit of license. You say, well, if this thing were to ever happen, then all bets are off. And I can go free range on all the worry, and I can spin out. If my spouse dies, then I could spin out. Just want you to know that, devil, if my spouse were to die, I would freaking spin out on life. Well, I don't want to give him that license, because those things do happen. There is sin in the world. Things don't run right. We've told stories before on the podcast of terrible financial things happening to us. One was me, this Bitcoin platform where I had all of my Bitcoin going under, and then just 80 grand worth of my Bitcoin going away. Well, I'm not going to make any promises with any. If I lose more than $50,000, I will go crazy. I'm not going to do that. So anyhow, that's why I think about the worst case scenario. Okay. I really like you talking about being a physically strong presence. And even if you're worried on the inside, you just still like, here's the promise. When there's a bump in the night, I think this is so important. And this is made fun of in sitcoms and comedy movies that, like, I think the girl can go answer the door in the middle of the night, whatever. No, it's dad's job that when there's a bump in the night, you go, I'll take care of it. And you could be annoyed and you could be nervous going down there at the huge bump in the night that you heard. Well, guess what? It's still your job. It is still your job to kill the weird insect, and it's still your job to go check out the bump of the night, et cetera. Because you are creating a godly filter for your family that doesn't allow for fear and anxiety to come in. So
And what's under that is, look, I'll lay my life down. My life down. Like, I'll take the bullet. That's what I'm here for. You want to be that guy.
Last thing before we wrap, you talked about kind of working through it in kind of vague terms, working through it in your 20s or maybe in your 40s. Mm-hmm. Can you give us any reference on what that looks like for you to personally work through it if somebody has fear and anxiety in their background?
Just today, I'm driving our car. Cars for me are a sensitive topic. I don't know why. When our car starts to flutter and act like, well, it's going to need to go in the shop, it makes me spin. It tempts me to spin and go, we're going to put it in there and it's going to be $2,000. And then they're going to find this. And then, I mean, that was happening to me today.
Okay.
And I'm driving along and I'm like, oh my word, how sad is this? I'm about to go on this little podcast, or big podcast, and talk about
little podcast.
I mean, sorry. Come on, it was another one. It was a show before this.
Oh, okay. You're doing a small one before the big one?
Just a warm-up.
Okay.
Pre-show.
That was the car. Was that the car podcast you were on?
The car pod. Yeah, it was called Car.
Yeah.
And so I was like, man, I'm anxious about this. Every rattle you'd hear, and every rattle was it's funny. I want to say made me anxious, made me scared. I think mm-hmm. that's a really dangerous bit of language. It implies you have no agency over this. Mm-hmm. And maybe a better way is to go, it tempted me to be scared. It tempted mm-hmm. me towards fear. And I was having to fight it and go, yeah, we might have to put this in the shop. And we're getting our bathroom redone. We're spending a lot of money. Yeah. And this car might have to go in there and we might add on. Has God ever gone, well, I guess you're in the poorhouse, pal? Not yet.
That's right.
Taken care of every single time. And so it's right there. If you identify the speck in your kid or in your wife, a little bit of anxiety, you best look out for that log in your own eye first. And mm-hmm. you've got to deal with it in you first. Please, the worst case scenario maybe is a fear-filled guy out there who gets frustrated and angry at his wife or children because they're fearful. Like, that's mm-hmm. bad news. That's really bad news. You've got to deal with yourself. You've got to let God judge you and lead you towards health in that spot. And like I said earlier, part of that is just be around people who can go, it's just money. You'll be fine. But you're not taking it very seriously. You'll be fine. We just need those voices.
And what are the actual words that you say to God when you have arrested a thought? You go, I'm tempted towards fear. Or maybe I've already fallen face first into fear.
Lord, I am sorry. I repent. This is wrong. I am not a fearful person, although I want to tell myself I'm not a fearful person. I am a faith-filled person. And fear, you don't have any space here. Beat it. Get out. I am a faith-filled person, and I will agree with God. And if 3 minutes later, rattle in the car happens, Abbott and Costello. When I get into mode, I do it again and go, Lord, I'm sorry. I don't want that. I need you. I'm not a fearful person. I repent again. I'm sorry. Keep me moving in the right direction.
That's great. And I'll just to explain some of that language. When you say, I'm not a fearful person, some people might say, well, you did it. You are fearful. What Jeff is saying is that in my spirit, the part of me that has been born again and born into God, that's not the real me. A fearful version of me is not going to be running around in heaven. There's a part of me that is redeemed and perfect. That's true. Perfect in Christ. There's a verse in Philippians says that we're seated with him right now in heavenly realms. I don't know how that works, but that's true. And there's a part that you're dealing with right now. You're dealing with the in-between time of dealing with your soul. And so we have to shut certain gates and we have to open other gates as we're working towards the reality, experiencing the truth, the eternal truth. So those kind of prayers where you're speaking the truth over God, I've been giving this line to myself that I'm a warrior, et cetera. I got to put off that old man, which I was commanded in Ephesians 1-4 to do. And I'm going to believe the truth about what you say.
But I got to say this. When it comes to loving your wife and helping her with this, what I think of is you're shepherding her. If you're dealing with your wife who has anxiety, it is not loving to affirm her fears.
Boy,
it's loving to say, I could see why you would get there, but you're not affirming all of it. No, because I'm not going to. To be honest, when I get fearful, my wife won't affirm my fears. She'll be like, I get it, but mm-mm. And I'm like, well, thanks. And it's good for me. And especially a husband needs to look at his wife who's dealing with anxiety. And the most loving thing you can do is, yes, you can affirm, I could see why you'd get there, but to shepherd her past that. Don't stop here. This is where most guys stop, as they go,
yeah,
I get it. Yeah. Oh man, I could see that. That would, and I'll tell you, in the moment that wife will feel loved and she'll go,
oh, cool. Yeah. Because she got some empathy out of you.
And it's just, I was listening to a podcast earlier, there's a book called The Sin of Empathy. If empathy in and of itself isn't helpful, maybe it's like the welcome mat to something better.
Yeah.
But it's got to move on. Real love is, I get why you'd get there. Totally get that. But we're going to move on towards here. And let's think about it from a faith perspective. But I know, I sure get that. But it's just continually shepherding and leading towards places of freedom. You've done that with me. Other men have done that with me. I'm grateful for it.
Awesome. Oh, well, thanks for being with us, Jeff, today. Okay. Well, review. Anxiety is a learned and addictive behavior. Dad is God's culture leader. You're going to get that stuff out of your home in the name of God as you run your home and you're done like a biblical boss. Bye.